from Claremont Craft Ales in Claremont, California. This is the Beer of the Day podcast. On today's show, we are joined by Brian Seffer and Nick Prado. Brian is the head brewer here at Claremont Craft Ales, and Nick is the production manager, and we have 10 different beers to try, all from Claremont. I'm Dallas Helliker. Joining me today, Jeff Miller, Andy Hamilton. Hey, guys.
How are we doing?
How's it going?
Hey.
All right. First brewery show. This is exciting. Let's get into the first beer of the day. This is Carlisle.
Yeah, so Carlisle is our pale ale. It's a very simple grain bill. Its idea is to introduce people to all of our hoppy beers that we make. It's a very simply hop beer, Summit bittered, Citra Amarillo finished, about 5.1%. Named after a castle in England. We'll get into later about all of our naming things, but it's a...
And you just took this out of the fermenter, right? This is
straight from the tank.
Yes,
this will be packaged on Monday.
So this is as fresh as it gets.
Yep.
Cheers.
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 So color-wise, it's a pretty golden,
Kind of light copper color.
Yeah.
It's got kind of a light hop aroma.
It's got a good amount of hoppiness. I mean, we like hoppy beers, but
yeah.
It's pretty hoppy for a pale ale.
It tastes fresh. It tastes really fresh. Really
I good. Hope so.
It's kind of a crisp beer, and then in the aftertaste, it kind of has a kind of a caramel malty character.
Yeah, this does have a fair amount of C120 in it. So it's going to give you a little bit of caramel, and that definitely shows up in the finish. With a beer like this, it's easy to make it, in my opinion, very flat. Not in carbonation, just in flavor. So we add a little bit more to stand up to the hops to make it a nice balanced pale ale.
I think it's a good first beer. I mean, this is a good one to start with. Very fresh, light, you know.
This is a great, like, football beer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I could drink this all day.
So you guys have been in business since 2012?
Absolutely. Yes. We opened August of 2012.
How far along in the process did this beer come out? Like, did you come up with this one?
This beer, this was
close.
It was either day one or the first week. I'd have to go back in our archives, but this was a little bit on our, I guess, who we are. We're a family-run business. It's myself, my wife, my wife's cousin, and her husband. So there's four of us, myself, Natalie, Emily, and Simon. Simon and I homebrewed in our garages for years before we opened the brewery. And this is actually a beer that Simon made in his garage long before we were open. So it was always a crowd favorite, and it came out right away.
So do you ever, like, tinker with a beer? Like, so you have an established beer that you've been making for years. Mm-hmm. Do you ever, like, try and make it better, or do you settle on it and say, this is the beer, and this is how we're going
to
make it?
Oh, yeah. We always look for ways to improve the beer. You have to go with, like, the times and stuff. Like, this beer we've changed a few times since we opened.
But when we find something that works, we really try to keep it. And we are improving our processes every day to make the beer cleaner, brighter, and just better overall.
Consistent.
But, yeah, we're experimenting every day, though. We have 25 beers on tap today, and that's because we like to tinker and play around.
I remember the first, you know, I come here every once in a while. The first time I was here, I was like, holy crap, I look at the board. Because we like to go to breweries, and we usually like to get one of everything. And that's just what we do. You know, most places have 7, 8, maybe 10 beers on tap. And we came here, we're like, wow, I don't know how we're going to tackle all this. And we didn't, you know, there's too much. But I think it's cool that you guys have so many different beers. I mean, the variety of styles is, you know, everything you have.
We try to please all beer drinkers. And it's funny because when I used to work the tasting room, people would always ask, where's all this beer produced? They didn't believe it was done here. I was like, no, they're all done here.
Well, I think that's great. You know, you don't just settle on the one that sells the best. You know, you make a lot of that. It makes sense.
Yeah.
But you're still willing to try to find the next thing, mm-hmm. you know? It's great.
So there's 25 beers up there.
Yes.
How many do you make that don't make it up there? Like...
In the history of our brewery, We've never not made a beer that didn't make it up there.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And
we've had ones that took forever to sell, but we've never actually brewed it, tasted it, and be like, no.
That's pretty good track record, Dan.
Knock on wood.
All right. So next beer, Jacaranda.
Yeah, so Nick's pouring that for us. I'll tell you a little bit about Jacaranda. Jacaranda is Claremont Craft Ale's flagship beer. It represents 50-60% of our production and our sales. It's usually the first beer that goes out to our accounts. So I know for most of you, it's the first beer that you tried of ours. And that's the case for most everybody.
Yeah.
Jacaranda is an IPA. It's true and true an IPA. We take 20% of the malt out, the barley malt, and replace it with rye. So you're going to get a nice spicy, complex flavor.
I love that.
And rye IPAs, I feel like, are a little hit or miss. There's some I don't care for, but I mean, Jacaranda was one of the first I ever had, and it's kind of how I measure other rye IPAs, kind of up against Jacaranda.
And Simon, like I said, our partner and brewmaster, made this, I think, he'd correct me if I'm wrong, but second or third batch he ever made. I remember trying it the first time and was blown away. And from that point forward, there's no doubt it was going to be our flagship, and it's proved to be what we thought it always was. It's a very simple beer. It's barley, two-row, a little bit of wheat, and some crystal malt, bittered with Columbus, and finished with Columbus, Cascade, and Centennial. So you're going to get all of that big citrus punch to match all of the rye spiciness.
All right.
And I remember this just being super smooth. Color-wise, it's a little more copperish brown color than the pale ale.
Not much. I mean, it's a little darker, but still along the same line.
I kegged this on Wednesday.
Yeah, so again, a very, very fresh beer.
It's awesome.
That's the cool thing about it. The best thing, you know, having fresh beer, being at the brewery, it's the freshest beer we're ever going to have on any show.
Yeah.
Smells good.
So you said it's 20% rye, right?
Yes.
So, which I think is good. Is that, from your knowledge, pretty standard, or do a lot of places more?
That's absolutely above the standard rye. We really want the rye to stand out, and I think it really does, especially in the finish. The back of your throat, there's a nice little scratchy spiciness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like very traditional IPA up front, and then you get that rye breadiness in the aftertaste.
And no, this beer does not have any jacaranda tree in it. We love our city. That's why we named our brewery Claremont Craft Ales. And a lot of our beer names have to do with the city. And jacaranda trees line the streets of Claremont, and we thought it was the perfect name for our flagship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got the finish on this is what's most noticeable to me. It's got a very lingering, it's not bitter, but it's got a unique...
Complexity,
yeah. I don't know quite how to describe it, but it just kind of, after you have this, several like a minute afterwards, you can still taste it in the back of your throat, like you said.
It lingers.
Like other than calling it rye or spicy, what would you call that? I mean, if you had to name it to a fruit or food or.
It's a little peppery, like black pepper.
Yeah.
Not chili pepper, like black pepper. Mm-hmm. But not super peppery.
And so was this one of the first ones that you guys came up with also?
Absolutely. Yeah. This was the first beer that we knew for sure was going to be in our tap room.
So were you making it before? You kind of had this recipe and you were making it and you're like, okay, well, we're going to start this brewery. It's going to be one of the ones.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Simon made, I think it was his second or third batch. And after that, it was every other batch because it was such a big hit. So... when it came time to start the brewery, we all knew it was a no-brainer. It had to be made.
When you first started making beer, what was the very first beer that you brewed?
Very, very first brew. When I do things, I kind of get obsessed. So I was in Park City, Utah, of all places. Fell in love with beer there. While I was there, bought my homebrew system. Came home the next day and brewed two batches the same day. One of them was an IPA, turned out awesome. Second one was a wheat beer. who Simon said smelled of farts. So, 50-50 on my first day, I chalked it up as a victory.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So how long from that day does the idea, hey, maybe we should start a brewery?
Day one.
Oh, right then.
The first time you taste a beer, Simon says this great all the time. He says, if your first beer is awesome, you're hooked. If it's horrible, you never want to do it again. Luckily, our beers were good, and like most home brewers, the next thought is, let's make this a brewery.
Yeah. But they did their homework. They homebrewed for years and years. They weren't like, oh, okay, we're going to go look for a space like tomorrow.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Dump your life savings into your first brew.
Yeah, exactly.
So how many of the beers that you have up there now did you kind of have in the bag when you started? Like,
So if I had just guessed about looking at our menu, 8 to 12. Yeah. I'd say about half of our recipes, half of our beers today, were here from, maybe not here from day one, but in our heads from day one, with the other half coming throughout time.
Yeah. Okay, well, you guys ready for the next one?
Yeah, what are we doing next?
Baseline.
So again, while Nick's grabbing him for us, I'll give you a little history on Baseline.
I'll be right back.
Okay.
Baseline started its life as our anniversary beer. Like I said, we opened in 2012. Baseline was our second anniversary beer. I tend to use anniversaries as excuses to kind of play around, do things a little off the wall, things that we don't do every day.
Mm-hmm.
First anniversary, we did a triple IPA that actually ended up being our triple dude that we have now. Second anniversary, the other thing with our anniversary, it's in July. It's 105 degrees. We can't make the traditional big bourbon barrel-aged stout. So, yeah.
Because we've talked about that on shows where a lot of breweries, if they make an anniversary beer, it's something like 12, 13% barrel age. You know, and it's different. Like if you're in Southern California, it's harder to do
that. You know, I think it's an excuse to make that beer more than it is. Because you could make that beer whenever you want, but.
Yeah, we've been joking around that we're going to have a 3.5 year anniversary beer and actually go do that. But
it's a good idea.
Yeah, so it's 105. Most people want a light, refreshing beer. So I decided to make what I jokingly call an IBA. It's an Imperial Blonde Ale that's hopped like a double IPA. 100% Pilsner malt, so you get the nice, crisp, light body.
Clean taste.
Very clean. It finishes incredibly dry, and we finish off the brew with a lot of lemon peel.
Interesting.
It is a simple, simple hop bill. It's bittered with Summit and finished entirely with Citra hops. So this should be a citrus bomb for all of you guys.
Great. So it's light in color. Yeah. I mean,
that's that Pilsner malt for you, working for you right there.
Yeah, it's 100% Pilsner. There's no caramel in this at all.
So this is 8%, over 100 IBUs, which, you know, when I look at this beer, I wouldn't guess that, but you could be surprised by, you know, the IBUs for sure. But it's looks like a light beer. It could be, you know, deceiving for sure.
And this beer was also kegged on Monday. So less than a week old.
I think
we're spoiled now. We're not going to be able to go back to the real world.
Can we rent out a room here? Just live here?
I think we have a couch in the back.
Yeah, we do.
So it's very fresh. I like the fresh hop taste. And I get a hint of the lemon, but I don't think it's overpowering. It's pretty subtle.
Yeah.
I think it adds a nice little complexity to the finish. It probably adds a fresher taste, and it's just, you know, it's citrusy for sure.
So is that lemon, is it Citra hops that we're tasting, or is there actual like lemon?
It's a combination of both.
So the primary flavor you're getting is from the hops. There's no doubt about that. To me, we do add lemon peel in the boil process. I get a little rindy bitterness at the end of it, and that's what the lemon really
contributes to.
Yeah.
That's something that's easy to overdo.
Oh yeah.
And you didn't. This is excellent.
Yeah, we didn't want like a puckering like lemon, like you're actually biting a lemon, but you're not chomping on the rind. It's just like a nice balance to.
Yeah, and that sure is balanced, man.
I could drink this all day. You said that about the first one.
This is a dangerous beer.
Was this 8%?
Yeah.
This is 8%.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've had this. I mean, this is a beer you've made for a while, right?
Yeah, we made it, like I said, in August of 2014.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it goes back to, you know, coming here and I can't try everything. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I see Imperial Blonde, and I probably never had that, but it is definitely more like an IPA, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the whole IPA thing was a little tongue-in-cheek for us, because it's most definitely a double IPA.
Oh yeah.
So you're saying you were thinking about rebranding this one as a double IPA?
Yeah,
because people don't understand.
Yeah, the Imperial Blonde Ale part, like, people just didn't really go for it. Like, if you're at a grocery store, like, Imperial Blonde Ale, that just doesn't seem appealing if it's right next to a double IPA. Or, I mean, me right. personally, I'm not going to grab a Imperial Blonde Ale. I would go for the double IPA.
And yeah, I mean, because people that like IPAs are looking for IPA. Yeah. So when they see Blonde, they're like...
Oh, people that come to the tasting room and actually try it, and they say, oh, Imperial Blonde, like, that sounds weird. And I'm like, okay, hold on, and they give it to them. They're like, oh, okay, then they understand.
Now they understand. I get it now.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Like I said, it was just a way to play around with stuff that we usually wouldn't do on a normal brew day, and
yeah,
it was a big hit. So much so that we
kept it.
You know, we kept it, named it, and now it's on our tap list all the time.
Yep.
So Nick, what does a cellarman do?
So basically, Brian is in charge of brewing the beer, and as soon as basically after he pitches the yeast into the fermenter, it's essentially my responsibility from there on out. So like, I'll dry hop the beer, I'll crash the beer, I'll carbonate the beer, I'll keg the beer, put it into inventory, and then when our sales rep, Taylor, who does all the local deliveries, when he gets orders, he'll give them to me, and I'll tell him, okay, take this keg, or if he asks me, like, oh, someone wants a tap takeover, what can they have? I'll say, okay, you know, you can offer them this, 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 or if someone wants something special, you can do this, 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 restock the tasting room with kegs, basically just manage all the beer.
Let's tell him the truth. In a brewery that's so small like we are, he does everything.
For lack of, I didn't want to say that, but yeah.
No, I mean, but what it sounds like is that from start until when you start making a beer till the time it's in the keg, you two are the only ones that touch it.
Pretty much, yeah. Like Brian and I sit down multiple times a week and try to figure out what beers need to be made, what beers are running low, and we will make a brew schedule and it changes the next day. I mean, it's hard, but
and there's, I mean, there's, it's not just two of us. It's Simon and I. Like I said, brewing in the garage. We are the brewers here. His title is brewmaster. Unfortunately, the office and all of the paperwork and everything takes so much work that he's usually, unfortunately, stuck in there half the time.
Right. It's almost like a kitchen. Like, the executive chef doesn't really cook a lot, but he's there, and the sous chef is the one that does all the cooking. Yeah.
That's a good analogy.
Like yeah, that. Similar. Yeah.
Okay, so next one. Roblade.
Roblade. So
you're going to be making a lot of trips today, sorry.
It's all right, man. Cardio.
So Roblade, this actually began way before we opened the brewery. This was, I guess, the core of it is a American Red IPA that we then age on oak. I made this before we opened in my garage. And right before we were open, Emily, our general manager, she was in love with Oaked Arrogant Bastard.
Uh-huh.
And we decided we needed to have a oaked beer. So we took Roblade, what at the time was a red IPA, and threw oak in it to see what would happen. And we sold it the first day we were open, and it was a big hit. The oak really takes away a lot of the hop punch. We've stopped dry hopping, obviously, now that it's an oaked beer. And it's just incredibly soft, incredibly smooth, and it's one of my favorites.
Can you tell us what, I'm not real familiar, what is SRM?
SRM is a unit of measurement of color.
Yeah, okay.
Standard reference method is what it stands for. Higher the number, the higher the color. A stout's 50, 30, 50. Once you get above 35 or so,
you can't see through it, right?
Yeah, it's black.
Gotcha.
If you go like a Bud Light, it's probably a 2 or 3 or 4 on the list. So
right.
Just for reference.
Okay.
This beer is very simple. Like you'll learn, our style is very simple brewing. We don't throw in 20 different malts. It's 2-row barley and Crystal 120. And it's 100% hopped with Zythos hops, which is a blend of hops.
Well, everything we've had has been very clean and like crisp and clean and I mean, everything's fresh, but it just has everything has a very clean taste to it.
Now, this next beer is not going to be fresh, but this beer gets better with time.
Yeah.
So I'm actually really, I haven't actually had a glass of this in a couple months, so I'm really excited.
And I like that, you know, we referenced Arrogant Bastard, Oaked Arrogant Bastard, because it's good to for our listeners to be able to reference something when we're comparing it. And
Because you're right. This, I mean, this is a small brewery, and I know you've grown, like, you know, we were talking before, and Brian was saying how, you know, they're growing organically, and as you just get save up the money, you buy new equipment. I thought that was pretty cool that it's, you know, it's, I've been here several times, and every time it's different what you have available to use.
Yeah, we've always had the mantra of we're going to struggle and go through the pain of having crappy equipment, and then when we finally save up enough money, we're going to buy the gold standard, and that's what we've really done.
So I really like the aroma on this. We just got the Roblade poured for us. It's aromatic. I mean, you can smell the oak.
Oh, yeah, that is nice.
Darker color, definitely more of a copper, amber color.
Not quite ruby, but you can tell it's red.
The aroma reminds me of something, and I just can't put my finger on it.
Something like, we had recently.
Yeah.
It sort of reminds me of that barrel-aged amber that we had last weekend from Indian Wells.
Yes.
That would make sense. This is essentially an amber ale now. That we've taken a lot of the hops out when we originally make it, so that would make perfect sense to me.
So, but the beer before it goes in the barrel and after, how much change does it go through?
Significant. This beer actually doesn't sit in a barrel. This beer sits in our stainless. We actually add oak into the stainless.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we use oak spirals.
A spiral has a lot of surface area, so we can age this beer with this level of oak in as little as 2 weeks.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, and it, I wish we had some. We actually have a tank full of this right now, but it's already been oaked. But the beer is night and day difference when it comes out of the tank oak.
Yeah, you get a little of that oaky flavor, and then but it just smooths it out. So it's like, I mean, everything so far has been, you know, pretty crisp and smooth. But this one, it's kind of like butter, you know.
That's
butter is a bad word, though.
it's like a silky kind of finish.
And I like, you know, a lot of people equate oaked to like barrel age, and they're two different things. Barrel age tends to have whatever liquor was in the...
Yeah, it's boozy, it's rich.
This is not that at all. It's just, it's clean, but dark at the same time, you know.
It's not too heavy bodied. Yeah. Like.
And 72 IBUs, I mean, you were saying how, you know, the oak takes a lot of the hop flavor away, and I...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I would never call this a hoppy beer, and I think that's what the oak does to this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely slows it down, softens it up a little bit. And like I said, I enjoy drinking this one because every sip is a little different. You pick up different tones, and it's been here since day one. And that's why.
I think there's also some vanilla flavors.
Yeah, absolutely.
You get the
The fresh oak that we use definitely has some vanilla. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So where does the name come from?
Roblade. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just the Roblade is actually I think Spanish for the oak.
Yeah.
And it's also the name of the local. Middle school in Claremont El Roble is the intermediate school that I went to.
But that's not why.
They're too young to drink.
Yeah, that's there's no correlation with that, but it's just Spanish for the oak.
Okay, gotcha.
And
serving school lunches,
right? Yeah.
Every once in a while when we feel a creative, we take the same beer, instead of oaking it, we'll dry hop it like crazy. We release it maybe once a year, and it's a crowd favorite. We call it Disroboid, and it's truly an IPA at that point.
Yeah.
But we love doing that at least once a year so people can have the Roboid and the Disroboid and see what oak does to
the beer. Same base beer, but just don't add the oak spirals and just dry hop it like crazy.
Very cool.
Have you guys had coffee dough?
I have.
Okay. So another name, I guess, theme that we use at the brewery, we're big dog people. So Dell is named after my wife's dog growing up. Just like Buddy is named after my dog now. Willow is named after Emily and Simon's dog. We're dog people.
Interesting.
Coffee Dell is one that messes with people's minds. If you go on Untappd, you go on Beer Advocate, that's the biggest comment. You know, this beer doesn't make sense. This is an IPA through and through. Summit hopped. But then we add locally roasted cold brewed coffee to the beer, and it opens up the beer to something that's completely different than you would expect. You still get the strong hop flavors, the strong bitterness, but at the same time, you get strong coffee flavors. It's something I'm going to have a hard time describing until you try it. It really messes with your senses.
Yeah, that's. I don't think I've ever had a coffee IPA before. The closest thing we were at yesterday at Eagle Rock, and they have a beer called Stimulus. It's kind of a coffee amber ale, maybe a little Belgian characteristics
kind
to
of
it.
Lighter colored.
Lighter colored. I mean, normally with the coffee beers, it's, you know, porters and stouts. But it's interesting to try it in, you know, different styles. So IPA, I think, will be the first one I've ever tried.
And I think we like, I mean, I've had this, I like it. We're all big coffee drinkers, so we're totally fine with coffee beers. Yeah, Stimulus is a good name for that beer.
I've actually not had that one. I got to go seek it out.
I think it's seasonal.
Okay.
They didn't have it last night. Weird.
They didn't have it on tap. They have it in bottles. But I look for it throughout the year, and I think it's seasonal. Okay. So you mentioned dogs. We go to a lot of breweries, and there's dogs at every brewery. I mean, I assume dogs are welcome here, right?
Oh, yeah, they're welcome, and we have dog treats out in front. I mean, sometimes this becomes a dog park, to be honest with you, and it's that's who we are. We designed this tasting room to be a community gathering point. You walk in here right now, there's a five-year-old kid, and 95-year-old grandma, dogs, families, and it's a place where people just come and gather, and that's something we're very proud of.
Well, I think the ambiance here is great. It's for a small brewery, like, you have a very big seating area. Like, you know, I think a lot of locals come here, plenty of space, it's open. I like that. I like the feel of the brewery when you're there. It's the, like, garage door that opens, and it's very open air.
That's exactly what it is.
Food trucks here all the time.
Like I said, when we opened up, we opened up tiny. We made 100 barrels of beer the first year, and with that type of production, you can't distribute. And so we rely on our locals, to our tasting room, to grow the business. So that's why we made the tasting room such a important part of our planning.
Mm-hmm. So we got our new beer, Coffee Dell.
This is a little cloudy, little hazy, kind of a orangish
marigold.
Okay.
Oh, marigold.
Getting fancy.
I know.
We'll go with that.
I only know the Crayola 6-pack or 8-pack or whatever.
You can smell the coffee.
Yeah.
Big time.
Not taking a sip. I mean, it's in the aroma for sure.
And yet there's still a slight hop aroma too. The coffee doesn't completely block it out.
So the coffee we use, and I mean, actually this might be a better thing for Nick to talk about. We specifically use a certain kind of coffee to make sure it doesn't overwhelm the beer.
Yeah. We actually use a local roaster from Clatch Coffee. They have a few locations, one in San Dimas, one in Rancho. And Coffee Dell uses their Panama roast. It's called Panama Alita Washed. What the last part means, I'm not really sure. But but it's more of like a fruity coffee as opposed to like an espresso that has a lot of bitterness and tannins to it. And what we do is we just cold brew it. And then we add that to the final product. So basically, instead of doing it in a big fermenter, I dose each keg as it's needed, and so that way the consistency is a lot more regulated, whereas opposed to if you douse an entire tank, some kegs might get more, some kegs might get less.
Right.
It's just easier to do it keg by keg, so then you know the consistency is obviously consistent.
So how much do you put in, like, per keg?
It's about, for a half barrel keg, it's about 3/4 of a gallon.
So we're looking at a ratio of about 30-1.
Wow. Yeah. It's amazing how strong that flavor is, though, that you can impart that much with just a little bit.
And how that came about is one day we were in the tasting room, they made a cold brew batch of coffee, and we took glasses of Dell and just added coffee. If it was too much, we would dump it out if it was right on, and then we'd measure how much coffee or how much cold brew we put into that glass and how much beer we put into that glass, and then they just, Simon and Brian did the math, and then they just told me what to do.
So was there trial and error about the type of coffee to use?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we went back and forth. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of having a local roaster.
Actually, I'll go grab some coffee.
Yeah, we have a great relationship with our local roaster. They win awards every year. They're one of the best in the area. And having them in our backyard, we were able to sample every coffee you can imagine. We use 3 or 4 different roasts that they make in all of our different beers, and this is definitely the lightest and fruitiest of them all.
There's definitely some elements of like cold pressed coffee, but it doesn't. Absolutely. It's noticeable for sure. I mean, some coffee beers, it's really subtle. This is more than it's not subtle, but it's not overwhelming.
Right.
What's really fun about this beer, we don't have it on tap today, but we often put this on nitro. And when it's on nitro, it's unbelievable. It's nice, silky, and smooth, and creamy. And the coffee comes out far more.
I bet, yeah. I it's funny, we went to San Diego a couple years ago, and one of the breweries there serves the cold brewed coffee. And I had never had cold brewed coffee. I didn't even know how it was different. I'm like, is it just cold coffee? And it's so good. You know, it's better than the stuff you get at Starbucks that's cold. It's, you know, that's just, it's crap.
Yeah.
But it's really good. And every time I see cold pressed coffee, I try it. And I really like this beer. Coffee beers really aren't my thing, but this one really offers a lot with the bitterness and the coffee working together very well.
Yeah, it took us a while to get the ratio down, but I think we did it pretty well. Like, it's not too overpowering like coffee. You still get some of the hot presence.
Aromatic for sure. The beans are.
Yeah, but you can tell that's the taste you're getting right there.
Oh, yeah.
This could be a breakfast beer if there is such a thing.
Oh,
you could replace your coffee with this.
Yep.
Yeah, but I do like the fact that it's not so overwhelming with the coffee. It's like a very good balance where you're getting the flavors of the beer itself, and then the coffee is just kind of an added component to it.
Yeah.
And it's light in color. Like, you know, like Dallas was saying earlier, a lot of coffee beers are your porters and stouts.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the color. You know, I like IPAs, my favorite style of beer, and I love coffee. Put them together.
Yeah.
I think it's a good combination.
People would always think that I poured them the wrong beer because they thought that it would be dark, and they were like, yeah, there's no way there's coffee in this, but then they would smell it, and yeah, clearly.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, use the facilities. When we come back, we have 5 more beers to try from Claremont Craft Ales. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Beer of the Day podcast. All right, if you enjoy this podcast and the Beer of the Day website and want to know how you can support us, you can do so by shopping on Amazon through the Beer of the Day website. We have a banner at the very top of the site that says support Beer of the Day by shopping on Amazon. If you click that, or you go to amazon.beeroftheday.com, it'll just redirect you straight to Amazon. You do your regular shopping, and then we get a little percentage of what you spend. It does not cost you anything more. The prices don't go up. It's the same old Amazon as you're used to, but we get a little bit of commission, and that helps us pay for everything that we use on this show and on the website. That's the web hosting, our email service that we use to send out the Beer of the Day emails each day, our SMS service where we send a text message with the Beer of the Day to your phone. There's all the beers that we have on the show and all the podcasting equipment. There's a ton of expenses. And by shopping on Amazon through the Beer of the Day website, you help us out a lot. For example, just today, somebody bought Hill's Science Diet Jerky Dog Treat Bag, 7.1 ounces. Apparently, one of our listeners has a fat dog that needs diet jerky treats.
That was for me, actually. It's cheaper than buying a regular beef jerky.
So from that purchase, we received 24 cents, and we're going to take that 24 cents and put it towards beer on a future program. So thank you very much for that. Also, you can help us by telling a friend about our show. We are a relatively new podcast. This is only our 32nd episode, not even a full year yet. And we grow by you letting your beer drinking friends know about us. So if you have a friend that likes craft beer, show them how to download the podcast on their phone or just send them the link to beerofthedaypodcast.com, and that's going to help us out as well. All right, let's get back to the show. All right, welcome back to the Beer of the Day podcast. Next up, we have the Nitro Milk Stout.
With coffee.
with coffee.
Yeah, so this beer should be fairly pitch black. It's a beer, so I fell in love with Nitro beers, and more specifically fell in love with Left Hand's Milk Stout. How can you not?
Oh, yeah, we've had it.
Yeah, it's the quintessential milk stout out there. So I saw a big hole in our lineup that we didn't have any type of sweet stout. So immediately went to the drawing board, tried to make this beer. Very happy with it. It's been a huge seller for us. And you guys just happened to be lucky to come the right week where Nick decided to add a little coffee to it.
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever tried doing the coffee milk stout.
Is it the same coffee as the last beer? Or?
No, it is same roastery, Clatch Coffee, but this time it's the Bell Espresso. So okay. It's going to be the darker roast. It'll have a lot more bitterness to it, and it won't be as fruity.
So it's the same milk stout as normal. You're just adding coffee.
Yes, I just cold brew the coffee on the side and then add it directly to the keg.
So I'm sure you guys know about milk stouts. They're back sweetened with lactose. Lactose isn't fermented by yeast, so it's going to be quite sweet, but it's exactly what it should be.
Me and a buddy just tried to make it wasn't a milk stout, but we did put lactose in it, and it was terrible.
what were you trying to make?
It was a chocolate raspberry stout with lactose, okay. And we were just way too light. It was watery.
It's a good idea. Okay. I like the thought of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the idea of lactose is to create a lot of body, so this should be far thick on the palate. Yeah. It should linger on the tongue for a while, and it's one of my favorite styles out there.
It's got kind of the warming mouthfeel, which I like. Again, you taste the coffee, but I think in this one it's a little more subtle than
Absolutely.
The coffee dome.
Yeah, I think that you get those dark roasted malt character, but then the nitro, the creaminess kind of balances that out. So
the coffee also kind of balances out the the sweetness of the milk stout and the bitterness of the coffee kind of balances it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of these beers that have the dark roasted flavor tend to be sort of bitter, and I don't think this is very bitter. It's super smooth.
So when you're deciding on brewing a beer, you mentioned Left Hand.
Uh-huh.
So do you try a beer and you're like, wow, that's an interesting idea. Let's try and do something like that, you know?
Absolutely. We get inspiration from everywhere.
Everywhere.
How it usually happens is we'll have a fermenter empty, and Nick will say, I don't know what we need to make. We're good with everything. And then the wheels get turning, and what's the last beer I really enjoyed? Yeah. Is there a hole in our lineup somewhere that needs to be filled? And creative process kind of goes from there.
25 holes filled up.
Your lineup is from A to Z. It's every, you know, you seem to have a little bit of everything.
And we do our best for that. And, one day maybe we'll have to make that a little bit smaller, but right now we want to keep everybody happy and make everything the same. So
yeah, because we are like true hopheads by nature. Like all of our favorite styles are IPAs, but I mean we do branch out. We love the dark stouts. We love baseline, like an Imperial Blonde. Like we like experimenting with different things.
Yes, yeah. Right behind me are 15 new Ryan bourbon barrels from High West Distillery.
Yeah.
I always say I make beer for a living, but I drink whiskey. So I can't wait to fill those. And my favorite styles nowadays are all of the bourbon barrel aged big beers.
Yeah.
So quite excited.
All right. Any last thoughts on this one?
No, it's not a style I gravitate towards a lot, but it's very drinkable, but it is one of those where the one glass is good for any given day. You couldn't drink a bunch of this.
The
sweetness would build, but it's excellent.
All right.
Cool.
Next beer, Triple Dude.
Yeah.
Woo.
Yeah, Triple Dude. We have a Dude series here. The Dude being named after my dog growing up, the Dude. Named after the Big Lebowski, of course.
El Duderino.
El Duderino, if you don't like the whole brevity thing. So we have a Dude series. Currently, there's four Dudes. We might add a fifth here. Current Dudes, we have a Single Dude, Double Dude, Triple Dude, and Grapefruit Dude. Grapefruit Dude being a newer edition that's gaining a little bit of traction. Mm-hmm. Triple Dude is the biggest of them all. It's a triple IPA. It's almost 10.5%.
Yeah.
It's a very hard style to make, in my opinion. With that much alcohol, it usually can become a malt bomb. So there's a few techniques we use to try to keep it as dry as possible to really let the hop shine, and I think we've achieved that quite well. Hops in this, there's a couple in there, but all you're really experiencing is mosaic. It's candy-like, it's fruity, and it's just in-your-face type of hop.
It's just favorite.
It's my favorite hop. I can just smell mosaic hops. I love beers with mosaic hops.
Yeah.
So I was really looking forward to this. It's 10.2%. Over 100 IBUs, yeah. But yeah, I love mosaic hops. I just love the kind of freshness that they impart.
Yeah,
more so than other hops. So color wise, it's not too dark. It's kind of that golden color. Very very clean look. Very clear. You know, most of these beers don't have much head on them. Is that just because we're having it straight out of the keg versus, you know, most of the shows we do, we have cans, bottles.
Because we're not very good at pouring the beers.
Honestly,
I mean.
Yeah, if you have full glass of these, they'd have a solid head.
But the fact that I'm literally just opening the tap and then closing it right away, it can't really form.
So
I can pour you a full one if you would like.
No, later.
Well,
after the show.
So this beer is about 6 weeks old now. It's not the freshest Triple Dew we've ever had.
Yeah.
This beer does change with time.
Mm-hmm.
When this beer is really, really fresh, the mosaic, in my opinion, changes with time. It starts out as very dank and very candy, but then it transitions to more of a fruity candy-like, and that's where we're at right now, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of the mosaic beers for people that haven't had mosaic hops, it's like Citra, but cut in half. You know, it's not so overwhelming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, very approachable.
I mean, I think the alcohol in here is pretty well masked.
Yeah.
I would not guess this was 10.2%.
This is a scary beer.
And it's you know,
you said baseline was scary. This one is scary.
Yeah.
The triple IPAs, like you said, they get that kind of they get malty and they get syrupy, and this, you know, it really the hops shine through, and you don't feel like it's 10% or higher. It's like maybe an 8% beer.
Yeah,
and it's pretty like floral, like citrusy hops.
Yeah, excellent.
And might be letting the cat out of the bag a little early here, but in about 6 weeks, we're gonna start bottling this beer.
Nice.
So in about 6 weeks, we're gonna bottle our full Dude series, not counting Grapefruit. We're gonna do single, double, and triple Dude, available in the tap room and throughout all of our distributors.
And right now, you don't bottle anything, right? It's just can.
Correct. Right now, we're gonna do some special releases in bottles.
You
know, people have been asking us for these beers in package, and we're gonna deliver on that now.
Awesome.
So, like comparing this to the Double Dude, how would you describe the differences?
The whole Dude series is supposed to be a series. I mean, they're very similar. All of these beers are quite simple. There's not any complex malt. It's almost all of two row. It's supposed to be let the hop shine.
Mm-hmm.
All the beers are very dry, very straightforward. We change the hops in each one of our in the Dude series. Single Dude is a Citra based beer. Mm-hmm. It's selling quite well and a crowd favorite. Double Dude's a Simcoe based IPA. Triple Dude being the mosaic, and with the grapefruit. It's obviously dominated by grapefruit flavor. And we're also looking at possibly adding a Little Dude.
What's that, Session IPA?
A Session IPA with unknown hops at this point.
Yeah. I like the name. I mean, that's a fitting name.
Little Dude. Single Dude, Double Dude, yeah.
Sorry, Andy.
I don't know if Brian mentioned this when I was pouring it, but the recipe has changed slightly, but Triple Dude was actually the... look, Taylor's calling me.
Uh-huh.
The Triple Dude was actually our first year anniversary beer.
Okay, yeah.
It was a they made a big triple IPA that then they renamed Triple Dude and then made tweaks to the recipe. So this beer isn't exactly the same as it was on the first anniversary, but the inspiration from it came from the first anniversary beer.
So Triple Dude was the first one, and then Double Dude and Single Dude?
No, Double Dude was here to start. Okay. It was one of the starting beers. Triple Dude, or the Triple IPA that they made at the first anniversary, was the first time Triple Dude actually came out of the city.
Yeah,
and then Baseline was the second year anniversary beer. And then
I guess a little bit more into the history of this beer. Double Dude was here from day, or week two, maybe. It wasn't here on day one. Triple Dude began as a single hop series. So we nailed down our mash bill, and we started playing with single hops. Citro, I think, was the first one. And we finally got our hands on Mosaic, which isn't easy to get. We made it. It was a home run. We said, okay, we're done. Triple Dude was complete. So we said, okay, let's make... We like this single hop thing. It gets people in the door. Let's do a single version of Double Dude. First batch, Citra. We're like, okay, we're done. It was a home run. So that's why we might start messing around with this session, because I like playing around with hops. So.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
Yes.
So, like, tackling making a session IPA, how do you go about doing that? Like, is it a challenge to keep it low?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you have to make compromises, right? And we talk about it a lot on the show. I haven't found one I like yet.
Well, Andy really wants to know this because he's going to make this as his next homebrew as a session IPA. Right.
Okay, I mean, it's quite simple. I mean, when you get that much alcohol into a beer, even if it is dry, alcohol creates an imparted sweetness. So the beer is always going to taste sweeter than it really is. Mm-hmm. So our technique is Triple Dude is almost entirely two-row. So there's not a lot of caramel malt at all in it. We mash incredibly low as we're comfortable to make sure we get conversion. We add some corn sugar to dry it out further. And really, quite frankly, we overpitch and try to get the yeast to really chew down on the malt.
Yeah.
So, this beer finishes surprisingly at 10.11, which is quite dry for a beer that starts at 10.95 or so. So that's what we're doing. And if, for the homebrewers out there, we let this beer ferment at 67 or so. And then towards the end of fermentation, really let it rise and let it do what it wants to do to really finish it dry.
Our beer sits in a bucket with some ice packs. We try to keep it below 70.
Okay, well, next beer on the list, Big Dalton.
So actually, I can talk a little bit about this beer while he's pouring it for us. We started this brewery, like I said, on a shoestring budget. We didn't have, you know, we did everything ourselves. Most of it ourselves. But we had a lot of friends help us. A lot of family, a lot of friends. So we like to name beers in their honor. We have a beer called Norman out there. It's our cream ale. Mm-hmm. Norm Barajas is a good friend of ours. Worked in logistics, so helped us with tons of stuff. So it's a joke, but his favorite beer at the time we opened was Bud Light. I think there's a picture of him in the hallway holding a Bud Light while we're building this brewery. So when we made the cream ale, we're like, okay, this has to be called Norman. And Big Dalton kind of follows the same thing. Big Dalton is actually named after a hotshot crew in Glendora. Hotshot crew are firefighters, wildland firefighters, who risk life and limb to take care of all the wildfire. They travel throughout the country, but this crew is based in Glendora in the Big Dalton area. Our good friend Scott helped us tremendously with this brewery as well, and he works on that crew. So we wanted to make a smoky beer, a smoke porter to be exact, and we thought what better way to bring out this beer but to do it for charity. So we made this beer, had released for the Wildland Firefighter Association, and all the proceeds, portion of the proceeds went to them, and along with the name of Big Dalton. This beer is big, bold, quite smoky, and it's one of my personal favorites. Have you guys had smoked beer?
We've had some. I haven't had this one, but recently I had the Alaskan smoked porter.
Again, that's the industry standard right there.
Yeah. I haven't had a lot, though. I mean, I'm not really a smoky beer person, but maybe this one will change my mind.
So kind of similar to Jacaranda, we took 20% of the normal barley out of this and replaced it with smoked barley. It's cherrywood smoked and applewood smoked. The first aroma is probably going to be a deep smoke aroma.
I just took a big whiff. And, yeah. You want aroma in a beer.
This little is ashtray.
So how do you do that? How do you get, how do you make a beer smoky?
So I guess the simple answer to that is quite literally you take barley and put it in a big smokehouse.
Okay.
We personally obviously don't have a smokehouse here, so we do buy it from our maltsters. They take regular two row and malt, and we, like I said, we bought both cherry wood and apple wood for this.
Barbecue.
I know
beer.
Alaskan, they actually smoke all of their own malts.
Yeah.
Barbecue beer.
It smells good.
Wow.
We need some ribs or something to go.
I know, right?
And this one can be dangerous too. It's a 10.5% beer.
That's an amazing aroma.
You think it's going to be overpowering, but then it's like, oh, it's not too bad.
There's a sweetness there too that kind of counterbalances the ashy qualities of the smoke. A lot of the smoke beers leave me with this feeling like I've been sitting in a room full of smokers, right?
And
your throat gets that way, but this has that sweetness. It's really well balanced. You taste the smoke, but it's not overpowering at all. Very drinkable.
Yeah, we didn't want to go for the you're chomping on charcoal smoke beer.
And every September, like I said, when we do this this charity event for the Wireland firefighters, we bring out a barrel-aged version, which is quite amazing. All of the smokiness from the whiskey really comes out nicely. Mm-hmm. The smoke is definitely less, and it really balances really
the
nicely.
The aromatic of the smoke kind of goes down a little bit, but it also gets emphasized in a way from just the charredness of the bourbon barrel, and it works really well.
When does that come out?
Andy's planning his next trip. But I like, this has a very earthy taste to me. Like it's, maybe it's the smokiness, but like if I'm out camping, this is a beer I want to drink.
Yeah.
Like you're cooking your tri-tip over the fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
Can of beans.
Yeah. Sitting around a campfire.
Make me hungry.
I know.
Yeah, it just smells like barbecue. Mm-hmm. You can't get away from it. It's like, makes you want to eat.
And we, like I said, we experiment all the time. You guys asked us, is there ever a beer we made that didn't make it on tap?
Yeah, I know what he's going to say.
And the true answer is no. We've experimented with smoke a couple times. We decided we were going to make a smoked pale ale, a smoked version of Carlisle, actually.
Yeah, it was called Smoked Carlisle.
And that was the beer we released. It was good, but that was the ultimate love-hate beer.
Oh, yeah.
People would either pour it down the drain or order five
or have three pints.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wow.
That was described as the liquid bacon beer. Like people just loved it or absolutely.
So we learned that we learned that smoke needs a little bit of malt to really balance it.
Yeah.
And that's why this beer to me is spot on.
But we never would have known unless we didn't try it. So
what's the strangest beer that you've ever brewed? Like a really weird one.
Would it be that smoked Carlisle?
Maybe.
I mean the Ride on Brown?
No.
No, Brian, that one?
No, it was definitely the smoked pale ale. Learned very quickly that without much
that
malt,
was technically, wasn't that technically our first smoked beer, or did we do Big Dalton before?
I think we did Big Dalton first.
Oh, okay.
First, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's definitely the strangest.
Yeah.
Or depends on you who you talk to. If you talk to somebody about our rice IPA for our third anniversary.
Oh,
they think that we were absolutely nuts to put rice in an IPA.
Like, we've never seen a rice IPA before. Like, what
that's
is that?
Us. That is.
So we did that on the podcast on, was it The Strange Brew? So each
probably.
Each episode we do a strange beer.
Yeah.
The weirdest beer we can find at the store, we try it. And we don't have one today, but I can't remember if the rice.
I think it was.
Third
I think
anniversary.
It was.
Yeah.
Because none of us had ever had a rice IPA, I don't think.
And when we made the recipe, it was kind of, we had baseline, our second anniversary. I'm like, how can we make this even lighter?
Yeah.
And
grow adjuncts in it.
And I couldn't find a rice IPA anywhere. I said, okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
Yep.
You never know. I mean, everybody's palate is different. Some
absolutely.
People will love it. Some people will hate it.
To this day, that beer, when fresh, is among my top five we've ever made. I absolutely love it. We'll bring it back next year even. So.
Oh, yeah. It's a good hot day beer.
That's the ultimate, like, golf beer.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Is that one that will become like a year-round beer? Like you won't do it again as the anniversary beer, or you will?
It'll probably be a seasonal beer. I see it as like a seasonal hot beer. Weather, like spring and summer, and then we'll fade it out for the winter and fall. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you guys have ideas for fourth anniversary?
I actually have talked to Simon about it, and I said, it's up to you. I'm tired of it. I said, this one's all on you. So he says he has some ideas. So our anniversary is in July, so we'll probably have to March, April, really start thinking about it and then make it in June. So.
You guys should definitely come, by the way, to the anniversary party.
I'll be here for sure.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, like I said, when I showed you guys around, we do have a sour in there. If somehow that can turn around, maybe we'll have that.
Oh, yeah.
True. That's a good anniversary beer.
Yeah.
Sour, yeah.
Have you guys done any sours before, or is that the first one?
We've done sours at home.
Or not any real sours. Like, we've done, for example, Willow on Acid. That's a fan favorite when we do it. It's basically just making a citric acid solution and adding it to our blonde ale. Yeah. And people, like, go crazy over it. And that beer only usually makes an appearance at our anniversary party, though. Or if someone, one of our local accounts, the owner loves it and he had it for his tap takeover. But other than that, it's usually just a special event beer that we do.
I mean, I'm not going to talk for everybody here, but I personally love sours. And
I do, too.
And well, in our current space, it's going to be hard to do.
Yeah.
But when we expand, you'll start seeing more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the craze right now.
Yeah.
Everybody is coming out with them. Sierra Nevada just came out with Ultra Vez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're in it now. And
it's an approachable style for a lot of people that don't even like beer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think that's
because it's like, if you like Sour Patch, here, try this.
Right. Yeah. I like them. It's definitely a different twist, and it's the new fad, you know,
absolutely.
But yeah, everyone's getting in on it.
I'll get up again.
All right. Two beers to go.
So we left the two biggest ones for the end here.
So this is a collaboration with Dale Brothers.
So yeah, there's an interesting story behind this beer. So I'm not sure how much you guys are aware of it, but our local area, the eastern LA County area and western San Bernardino County, is exploding in beer right now. Dale Brothers is the long tooth one here. They've been here for they're celebrating their 13th anniversary next weekend. And highly recommend anybody in the area to purchase a ticket. There's going to be awesome breweries, awesome wineries, cideries. It's going to be a big party. It's at Cable Airport next Saturday.
I think that's probably how I found out about you guys was I was at Dale Brothers.
Okay.
Afterwards, went to Eureka Burger in Claremont and had Jacaranda on tap.
Okay.
And was like, wow, this beer is good. I got to find this other brewery here.
Yeah, and they're definitely the pioneers. They've been around forever. Kurt Dale is brilliant. And in fact, they won a GABF medal this year with their cream ale. So they're producing fantastic beer. But like I said, it's exploding. We have, off the top of my head, about 7 or 8 breweries within 10 miles of us now.
Yeah.
This year, there's going to be another half dozen of more opening. So last year, Kurt Dale and I got together and said, let's collaborate. Let's make something. Let's do something that we do well and then do something you do well. So we decided we're going to make a triple black IPA. For the homebrewers out there, 1.2, a massive beer, original gravity, trying to get it as dry as possible. We failed. There's no doubt about it. The beer stalled at 10:40. It was way too sweet. So Kurt and I said, all right, let's mess around. Let's throw some bugs in a barrel. So we took that beer, threw some bugs into a barrel, and actually it worked. It fermented down very, very dry and ended up being completely different than what we're going for, but awesome nonetheless. You're going to get a little bit of funkiness from some of the Brett, and a little bit of lacto in there as well.
Yeah.
Slight sourness, but not anything that was over the top. We only have about 3 gallons of this left, so... you guys are in store. The rest of it I'm going to take to the party next weekend, and we're going to, you know, compare it with theirs and have some fun.
That's the beer we're having next?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
This beer is naturally fermented to about 15% alcohol.
Wow. I love those wild ales that balance the Brett and the lacto.
Yeah.
Because it's not a sour, but it has a little of that quality to it. So, and
this beer, it, like I said, it was fermented with neutral yeast all the way down to 1040 or so, and just finished with that. So it's going to be mostly clean, but with a little funk there. So.
And you have so little of this left. It's not available, right, for any, like, it's not on the menu?
It will be on tap this week.
It will be.
And that's about it.
And then it'll be gone.
Yeah. Dale Brothers will have it on tap at their event next weekend, though. Just for the record, Kurt and I are going to try this again, and hopefully it works out with the actual black IPA that we were going for originally.
You know, that's something I love about the craft beer industry is the camaraderie, you know. You don't see that in a lot of industry, and it's something that separates it from everything else.
I mean, I'll say it on this, if it weren't for Dale Brothers, we wouldn't be here today. So everybody's so cooperative, everybody's helping each other out, and it's a beautiful industry that we're in.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned other breweries in this area.
Yeah.
Dallas and I were here one time, and I think we came here first. I think we went to Dale Brothers also. And at each place, like, whether it's an employee or we're just hanging out with a customer, they tell us, like, somewhere else to go that we wouldn't know about. And so we're here and somebody says, oh, go to Rock House.
Yeah.
So when they had amazing beer. Like, it's probably the smallest brewery I've ever been to, but great beer.
You guys are huge compared to them.
Right. Yeah. and it was awesome. And we hang out there. And we were talking to the guy who's one of the brewers. And he's like, oh, you got to go to Hamilton Family Brewery. So we go there, and it's like these are places that we probably wouldn't know about if it wasn't for word of mouth and just being at one brewery and they tell you to go somewhere else.
Yeah. We're in a beautiful time right now, and this is going to become a beer destination here soon. So we're proud to be part of it.
It's amazing. 2 years ago, we were down here, and there was like, I mean, there was more than three breweries, but there was like three options, like Angel City, Smog City, and Golden Road. That was it. And now I pulled up the map of all the breweries, and they're just everywhere.
And
like,
it's only going to increase from there. So it's a beautiful time.
So we got our new beer here. It's this experimental beer.
Does it have a name?
It does not. Experimental.
Experimental Black.
Experimental Black.
It's got a good aroma to it, too. I mean, it almost smells like a barrel-aged.
Yeah, this actually sat in a bourbon barrel.
Okay, you're right. It did. Yeah, it's got the bourbon smell.
You don't pick up much of the funk on the aroma, but maybe that's the barrels is overpowering that.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like it. This is when you talk about a complex beer, this is a complex beer.
Oh, yeah.
You don't know which direction it's going.
No.
It goes from, like, chocolate to sour to wild and...
and hot, too.
And hot,
There's, like, four different phases of the taste.
This is the biggest naturally fermenting beer we've ever made at the brewery.
Wow, that's great.
I think you got to find a way to make this again.
I don't know if we could replicate it perfectly.
Shot in the dark.
Yeah.
It's like it's smooth. There's a little bit of bitterness. I mean, there's some dark fruit flavors.
Yeah.
Like some dark cherry, raspberry type of stuff. Some chocolate, like this is a little bit of everything.
This was almost like a kitchen sink beer when it came to like maintenance with it. Like there was no real set plan on when to keg it or how to treat it. It's just like
kind of just let it do. Yeah,
just let it do whatever. Like if the airlock overflowed, just let it crust over and.
And for homebrewers out here, like I said, it's 1020 beer or 1.2 beer down to 1008, so.
So we should say color-wise, it's dark. It's not black, but it's dark.
Brown.
It's dark brown, like dark mahogany.
Yeah.
With some like red highlights, especially around the edges of the glass.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the color is beautiful. It's.
Yeah, that's the sourness. It's just it parts a little of that like black cherry type taste.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
tartness.
Yeah, there's some tartness.
Definitely tartness. Yeah.
But it's like, I like it because it's like a sweet chocolatey flavor and then followed by some tartness.
Like a chocolate covered cherry.
Yes.
Yeah.
It reminds me a lot of the beers from, in the tartness category, as far, like from Tahoe Mountain. I don't know if you're familiar with
them. Absolutely. Great beer.
they do not this style, but they can lace in that little bit of tart into any beer, and it's just amazing.
Yeah, this reminds me, I think last year was kind of the year for the barrel-aged imperial stouts, and you know, they had the barrel-aged narwhal from Sierra Nevada. They had Speedway
from Alesmith,
from North Coast barrel-aged Old Rasputin.
That was a good one.
That's a good beer.
And this kind of reminds me of in that style where I mean, you say black IPA, but it really it has, with the barrel aging, it just has a lot of the qualities of those. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it eliminates a lot of the hops.
The hops you're left with almost is
the malt, and it's dark, and it's,
you know, on the nose, I don't get any hops whatsoever.
Yeah, that's great. I like that a lot.
Does it get to a point where, like, you use a barrel so many times that you have to stop because it doesn't impart the same flavors?
Yeah, we typically only use a barrel twice.
Okay.
The first time, 3 months or so, and it has a fantastic bourbon, a little of oxidation that we're looking for. And then the second time, about 6 months. After that, it's a neutral barrel to me, pretty much.
What do you do with them when you're done? Are there other people that want them when you're done?
We either, like I said, we depend on our locals, so we give them to our customers for furniture.
Yeah.
Before we had these high tops, we put barrels out there. There's a new sour brewery opening in Rancho, so he's taking some of the sour beers into. Nice. But it's exciting. There's a 100% sour brewery opening down the street.
Oh.
And he's doing.
Hopefully, it's not a fad.
But he's brewing. It won't be open for a year, though, because it takes, obviously, a long time to make sour.
That's Jeremy Warren from Knee Deep Brewing.
Okay.
He's opening a new brewery. He's separated from Knee Deep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You have any Knee Deep?
Oh, I love Knee Deep. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, if you're a hophead, you gotta love it. I know he's been making sours in the meat. Like, they weren't going to open until February, which is next month. And we just found out today they're going to put it in West Sacramento. So
that's what I was going to ask. Where at?
Yeah, he was been keeping it a secret because I don't think he knew where it was going to go.
They're in Lincoln, right?
They were started in Lincoln, then
Auburn.
They opened up in Auburn, which is about 40 minutes out of Sacramento,
which is where Andy lives.
Okay.
Yeah.
North.
A really cool facility. Like, I mean, they bought it to expand, and then they just blew that thing out. Like,
you walk in there, it looks like an airport. Like,
they're over.
Really?
Like, well, it's at an airport.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've only been there once, but it's like it's like humongous. Like, the ceilings are like twice as high as this. Yeah. It's so deep. Like, it's like a hangar.
But that place, they just crank it out now.
Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah. But I'm real excited to see what he's doing. I know he's doing some sours. It's going to be amazing, I think. He was the thumb on the beers there. You know, they've got a nice lineup already, so I think they'll be fine. But the new stuff that they come out with might not be the same as it was.
All right, ready?
Yeah.
All right. Last
beer. This is barrel-aged rye wine.
Exactly. We call it barrel-aged. The beer itself we call it Jack Jack. Name behind that is, it's, if you look at the malt bill of Jacaranda, it's double that. So I would call it Jack Jack. The hops, obviously, we want to make this a rye wine, which is going to be far less hop than a IPA, obviously. So it's the same malt bill, just increased, obviously, from Jacaranda. So this beer is going to be quite spicy, but also quite sweet. It's not going to have that hop background to really challenge the malts. This was aged in Elijah Craig 12-year bourbon barrel for about 4 or 5 months. And it's one of my favorite that we've actually put out right now.
It smells like bourbon without the alcohol burn, you know, if you can eliminate that from your nostrils.
Well, I think bourbon barrel-aged beers, I can smell the smoothness before I taste it.
Yeah.
Whereas you smell bourbon and there's no smoothness. It's like it's the kick, even on the aroma. But when it's a beer that's in a bourbon barrel, you smell the smoothness.
Yeah. And I think I'm not a huge bourbon drinker. I enjoy it. But I think bourbon, like IPAs, people that are IPA heads, you learn to eliminate the burn from the alcohol. Yeah. When you're tasting bourbon, then you get to all the underlying factors, mm-hmm. right? It's just like IPAs. You get over the bitterness,
yeah.
and then you can taste everything else. Yeah. And this is what that is. I love it.
Love the color.
Yeah. Color-wise, that's a good-looking beer right there. Kind of a light brown or dark amber color.
Yeah.
And like just like Jacaranda, this is 20% rye, significant amount of crystal, quite sweet, but appropriate for the style.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't taste the rye as much in this. It's maybe there's other flavors that are more apparent, but the Jacaranda, I definitely taste the rye. This is a little bit less. But
sweeter.
A little sweeter. But you're right. There's the.
But it's not like that barley. It's not barley wine sweet.
No.
That's what I love about it. Is it's like.
Well, I think the body on this is a little lighter than like a barley wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you say rye wine, I'm like gearing up for barley wine. Right. You know.
Yeah. It's not that.
It's not that, which is great.
We do have a barley wine.
We do have a barley wine,
and it's gonna be the sweet, crazy
Beer
that you're probably thinking in your head.
Barley wines. A lot of those is like. With a lot of beers that we have is you enjoy the one, but you can't drink much more. This one you can drink a little bit more.
This is dangerous.
Yeah, this one clocks in about 12.5% or so.
I could definitely have two of these.
The non-barrel aged version, you definitely get a lot more of the rye malt characters coming through, because the rye malt does kind of disintegrate a little bit with the aging process of the bourbon barrel.
And just kind of like Roblade, how it cuts into the hops, the wood and the bourbon really cut into the rye spiciness.
Yeah.
So it makes it a little more subtle.
So, you know, we have a 3-sip rule here where you have to have 3 sips before you really judge a beer. And my first 2 sips, I didn't get any peppery spice at all, but on the third one I did.
Yeah.
And
it definitely accumulates.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, I like the fact that it's not too heavy.
Yeah.
You know, it really keeps a lighter character, and for that high alcohol, it's kind of, I don't know, hard to believe.
It doesn't have like that rich viscosity of like a normal bourbon barrel aged beer, exactly. Where it's like you have 2 ounces and you're like, oh, you have to drink water after to get your mouth back to normal.
Yeah, this, I mean, it's definitely a beer. Like when you say rye wine, you're thinking it's going to be kind of a
like thick.
You know, barley wine, and you get into that, but this is actually, you know, it's a beer, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot.
You can identify, somebody that's never had beer before could imagine that this is a beer, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot lighter body than a standard barley wine, but for sure.
Yeah. All right, well, I think it's that time of day where we decide what our favorite beer of the day was.
Uh-oh.
We have a tough decision. Andy, you want to recap what take us back through?
We have what?
We have 15 more if you want.
Yeah, we can go through the list.
The problem is that at the end, I don't know that we'd be much good to anybody.
Yeah.
All right, so we started off here with the Carlisle Pale Ale. We moved on to the Jacaranda Rye IPA, then the Baseline IBA, the Imperial Blonde Ale, or...
Double IPA.
And then we had the Roblade Oaked Red Ale, the Coffee Dell, the Coffee IPA. Then we had the Coffee Milk Stout.
On Nitro.
On Nitro.
Mm-hmm.
We moved on to the Triple Dude, Triple IPA. Then we had the Big Dalton Smoked Porter. The, I'll just call it the Experimental Black IPA collaboration with Dell Brothers.
Perfect.
And then the barrel-aged rye wine, the barrel-aged Jack.
Yes.
All right, let's spin the wheel here and decide who's going to go first. It's Jeff.
Jeez. This is tough because I can honestly say I really liked every beer that you guys make.
Thank you.
You know, we go to a lot of breweries where there's one or two beers I really like and a lot that I don't care for, but all of these were good. I mean, there wasn't a beer here that I didn't like. I think my favorite though, and I've never picked this category of a beer, but my beer of the day, I think is the Big Dalton, the smoked porter. I haven't had a lot of these smoked porters, and the flavor that I got from that, the smokiness was, and the aroma just hit you big time. I think I like coughed when I smelled that. But the flavor from that, it's like I want to drink that. You know, you can't drink a ton of it, but to on any given night where I just want like one good, really tasty beer,
yeah,
I think that's a good go-to if you like smoked beers. So I'm going with the Big Dalton.
All right.
Nick, what's your favorite beer of the day?
Oh.
This is tough when somebody works at the brewery.
I know. I'm like, am I going to be judged by my boss guys, right now?
You guys can pass if you like.
No, I'm not going to pass.
I mean, it, you know, it's for the moment, too. It's whatever your favorite beer is right at this
beer
moment.
Beer of the day means today the best one that you enjoyed. You
know? Not to sound like a copycat, but I think I will also pick Big Dalton, mainly because it is, and it sounds very sad, but it is one of those beers that does get lost on our menu. And I honestly haven't tried that in a while, and it was amazing. And I'm very sad that I haven't been drinking that a lot more often because the, like you said, the smoked malt nose is just amazing. And then you go to drink it and it's not an overpowering amount of smoke. You're not chomping on charcoal. It's a nice balance of malt and smoke and sweetness and bitterness and just everything. Like, the complexity is beautiful, and I think I'll pick, the Big Dalton.
So, you know, at first I have to, you know, agree with Jeff is that, you know, all these beers are very good and you could tell that they're all quality. And you go to a lot of small breweries and, you know, I get that you're trying a bunch of different things and a lot of them you'll find one or two or three beers that are great. But then there's some that, you know, they probably just shouldn't have even put out. But the fact that you've never had to do that, it says a lot. All of these beers are, I would say, for the styles, are very approachable. Like the smoked beer isn't one of those that's trying to. So there's some smoked beers that try to get beer drinkers to pucker up and not be able to.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point in doing that? You know, that only applies to, you know, 50 people in your distribution. It's like there's no reason to do that. All approachable beers, all very representative of the styles. I really enjoyed all of them. I'm gonna go, and I'm sad because you'll probably never be able to make it again. The experimental black IPA, that was so good.
There's less than 5 gallons in existence.
I'll buy them all. I knew Andy. I didn't pick that because I knew Andy was gonna pick it.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I think when we collaborate next year or this year actually and do it again, I might have to throw some into a barrel for you.
Okay, we'll be back for sure.
We'll mail it to you.
My beer of the day isn't going to be a shock to anybody who knows me. It's Triple Dude. See, I'm a hophead.
Yep.
It's why this brewery exists. We make hop-forward West Coast-style beer.
There's a reason the hops are in the logo on his sweater.
Exactly. This was a labor of love, Triple Dude. It's not something you can drink every day. So working in a brewery, I don't drink beer every day anymore. When I really want one, it's got to be Triple Dude.
Yeah.
When this beer is out of the tank, it's unbelievable.
It is.
It is a hop lover's dream, and it's my beer of the day every day.
Yeah. His like baby.
It. Well, I was going to go Triple Dude, but then I had that Jack, and that has to be my beer of the day. This one, it's so smooth and drinkable
unique.
For that high of
it's
an
so
alcohol.
Unique.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I mean, I got to have another one before I leave here today. That's
as you should.
Definitely good. Well, I want to thank Brian and Nick for having us out here. It's
thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Anybody, if you're in the LA area, I won't even say East LA. If you're in LA,
get here.
You got to come to Claremont. The beers here are fantastic, and we're not just saying that because we're here and we're with the head brewer and the production manager.
I said it before I even met these guys a year ago that the beer here is amazing.
Well, thank you. For anybody in LA or the surrounding areas, we did just open distribution to all of LA County.
Yes.
So if you're in El Segundo, through the valley, all the way out here, you should be able to start
the downtown
our beer.
Area.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
And that's only going to grow throughout the year, so hopefully you'll see us in a few more places.
Yes,
definitely. All right. All right, well, that's going to close out our Claremont show. Once again, thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you for having
Thanks for having us out. It was great. We got to try a lot of good beer. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see you next time. Beer of the Day podcast.